Welcome to the House of Comments. With me, as always, is my friend and political commentator, Mark Thompson. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
And I'm delighted that we are joined today by co-editor of Lib Dem Voice, Karen Lindsay. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
So, one of the big political news stories of the week, certainly in House of Comments land, is the fact that I am no longer describing my my partner, Mark Thompson, as a Lib Dem blogger. And that's because the last blog post that Mark wrote, he revealed that he has actually left the Liberal Democrats. So, Mark, what brought you to this decision?
On a point of technicality, I haven't actually left yet. I'll probably do that tomorrow. We're recording this on Sunday, but yes, I am leaving. So, really, I think this had been coming for quite a long time. There's a number of things that the party has done, either through choice or because it had to do in government, that I've just not been happy with. I mean, you know, secret courts was the big one for me back in about April, when the conference yet again made its view very clear, but the government, including the Lib Dems, just put it through, and, you know, and Lib Dems in big numbers voted for it on a party whip. You know, I was furious about that, and I didn't leave the party at that point, but I did pledge to not campaign for any MP that voted for it. But really, you know, that was kind of a sticking plaster. I mean, maybe I should have left at that point, but the reason I've left now is not particularly for any one individual policy. It's partly an accumulation of things, not just secret courts, but other things as well. But more importantly, it's that actually I just feel that politics is fundamentally broken. And being a member of one of the main parties that is, whichever way you look at it, complicit in that. They may not be happy with a lot of it, but they are complicit. You know, they're a part of the government. They have 57 MPs. They are part of the establishment. I mean, it's things like just the ridiculous situation you have at just after noon every Wednesday that Parliament sits, this just like Kafkaesque situation of MPs shouting and jeering and, you know, and it's all about who, you know, who's bested who. And it's absolutely pathetic. It's driven me nuts for years. I've talked about it on this podcast. I've talked about it on the media. I have written about it. And it might seem like a minor thing, but for me, it's symptomatic of a wider problem just about how politics is practiced. You know, the way politicians are often, when they're asked questions, they use these kind of, you know, clever, in quotes, evasive techniques where they won't answer. And I mean, I understand there are reasons why it's difficult for politicians to answer questions sometimes, but it is just seen as a game. And as I said in my blog post, actually, this is one of the reasons why increasingly members of parliament are former special advisers, because it really takes someone who has very, very, very closely studied the art of politics for maybe 20 years before they can actually practice it in such a way as to not fall into the elephant traps that, you know, other sides are going to be setting for them, and the media will set for them as well. I'm reminded of Baroness Videra, actually, back when Labour were in power, where I think it was I can't remember his name now, Alistair someone, the guy who does ITV news sometimes. He asked her a question, and he asked her about green, whether there were any green shoots she'd seen, and she responded something like, I think, yeah, maybe I've seen a little bit. And, you know, that was seen as a massive gaffe because of what Norman Lamont said back in 1993. I completely understood why it was seen as a gaffe, because you don't say green shoots anymore, but she wasn't aware of that. She hasn't spent her life studying the minutiae of politics and the pathetic things that happen in politics in this country. You know, that's just like a tiny example. You know, and it's just, like I say, I just think that things are fundamentally broken. Politicians and you know, the government don't respond to things in a sensible way. We've had an example today, actually, where an academic has put forward an idea that perhaps we could maybe look at potentially reducing the age of consent from 16 to 15. And there were some good, as far as I could see, strong reasons, evidence-based reasons, why it's at least worth looking at. And immediately Cameron came out and said, no, we're not going to do that. No, full stop. And it's exactly the same attitude as you see with drugs policy and with immigration. Just no engagement with the debate. You know, the idea that we have debates in this country... You know, we usually don't have debates. We usually have very fixed positions that are chosen either for ideological reasons or for reasons because politicians are terrified of what the press might say and do. You know, and I personally, being a member of one of these parties, was complicit in all of that. You know, I deliver leaflets, I canvass, I speak to people, I try and persuade people to vote for the Lib Dems. I speak on the media as a Lib Dem member, I write from that perspective. And for me, it was just untenable to continue in that vein.
Okay. I mean, obviously, there are questions to be asked as to, you know, whether what your realistic expectations of being in government were, and whether that is what has driven you out, because you, it was very easy to be in a party of permanent opposition, opposing things, and that's quite fun to do. And whether there was, you know, once your party had to be the one making the difficult decisions, you weren't ready to cope with that. How would you respond to that?
Well, it's a fair point. And, you know, a lot of people have left the party for that reason. I mean, like I say, that isn't really the primary reason why I'm leaving. I mean, the structure of politics and the way it's practiced has always been a problem for me. I mean, I'm 39 now, and I joined the Lib Dems 5 years ago, and I was 34. But it's not like I just suddenly became interested in politics in my mid-30s. I've been interested, you know, some might say, some of my friends and family would probably say obsessed with politics since I was about 12 or 13. It just took me 20-odd years to actually join a party. And a big reason for that is because I always struggled with how politics is practiced. But joining the Lib Dems when they were in opposition and when they seemed very much in tune with me in that respect. So, you know, they have always campaigned for electoral reform. They wanted House of Lords reform, you know, kind of civil liberties and, you know, lots of things that they were in tune with me on. And I think that had they remained in opposition, you know, let's be honest, they would have opposed quite a lot of what this government has done. And certainly the things that I'm not happy that this government has done, I expect they'd have opposed, you know, so they'd have railed against the bedroom tax. They'd have, you know, they'd have not been happy with the raising of the VAT rate. They would not have been happy with the reduction of the 50p rate, et cetera, et cetera. So had I been a member of the party and they'd have been in opposition, I'd probably still be a member, if I'm honest. And because there'd always be that hope that were they to get in, we would see big changes when it comes to constitutional reform because Lib Dems would be in power. And we haven't seen any of that. And again, as I said in my blog post, I'm not specifically blaming the Lib Dems for that because, you know, the forces of conservatism in Labour and the Tories closed ranks to do their utmost to see AV shot down, and they were successful. They did the same about House of Lords reform. You know, so I'm not specifically blaming them, but just for me, remaining a member of a party that is complicit in all of this stuff, and really, for one reason or another, it either isn't able to or just isn't willing to make those changes. Because, you know, although I know that they do want certain reforms, you know, I've not ever seen any senior Lib Dem anyway come out and say we need to change the structure of PMQs. You know, Nick Clegg stands in for David Cameron. He's never made any changes to it. He seems to revel in it. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Karen, I'm going to bring you in here as somebody who's obviously, I don't know whether you've made the opposite decision or that decision has never presented itself to you. How do you feel about the issues that Mark's raising?
Well, I have to promise you that there's absolutely no, I am not in this game because I like watching PMQs, that's for sure. That pantomime is an absolute disgrace. But on the other hand, I know that day in, day out, Liberal Democrats, Labour, Conservative politicians, and actually most of the people that I've known over 30 years in politics, they're in it for the right reasons. I might not agree with them, but they're good, decent people, and they're trying to make people's lives better. Unfortunately, when you put them all in one room and let them shout at each other on a Wednesday at 12 o'clock, it gets a bit silly. But, you know, in local councils up and down the country, parties are working together, doing good things. It's very difficult for us, for the Liberal Democrats within the coalition. The reason that I it's never crossed my mind for an instant that I would leave the party that I have been a member of for 30 years. I joined on my 16th birthday, and I knew about 3 or 4 years before that I was a Liberal. But it's never crossed my mind to leave because I think we're making the best of a very difficult situation in government. it was the only option we had at the time to go into government. And I just feel that although there are policy things that we have done that are just very difficult for me to accept, on the other hand, I look at what life could have been if we hadn't gone into government. There'd been an election a few months later. We'd have seen a Tory majority government. I'm absolutely certain of that. And they would be doing all the things like taking housing benefit off 25-year-olds and limiting child benefit after the first two children that we have been able to stop them doing. They'd have introduced hiring and firing at will. So I do feel that we are making enough of a difference in government, even though some of the stuff that we have done drives me mad. But to take Mark up on the point that he was talking about the age of consent, Nick Clegg, when asked about this, said, well, no, I think what actually we need to do here is have decent sex education. We need to update, we need to bring it into the 21st century. So he is going back and looking for an evidence-based solution. But I want to say just, I am gutted to see Mark leave. I'm not surprised. I kind of feel that I've seen this coming for quite a wee while. But I think that you, Mark, will continue to write on the subjects that you're interested in. I'm interested on drugs and on political reform. I hope that we'll be able to work together on that going forward. But I do think that in our political system, the way it is, you aren't going to get change without being part of some political movement, some organised political movement. If we were in, European country with a really kind of open PR system where lots of different parties were able to, you know, you'd only need about 5% to start getting MPs or something like that, that would be very different. But we're not. Yeah, actually, unfortunately, we do have to have political parties. And in because you need so much effort to win seats under this system, you have to get such a high proportion of the vote in one area, you do actually need to have parties that are actually quite broad coalitions. I mean, they all are. You can see you've got the right wing of the Conservative Party right through to Sarah Wollaston. You've got the kind of the economic and social liberals and the Liberal Democrats, although we are all very united when it comes to civil liberty, so it's not as factionalised. And the Labour Party, I have to say, Emma, is probably one of the most factionalised institutions known to man. Would you not agree?
More factional than the Tories? No, probably not. We're all the same. The Lib Dems are just discovering it for themselves and how much fun it is when you get into government and those factions actually get to fight over power.
Can I just say though, Karen, thanks very much for what you said, and I'm already missing being in the thick of it as regards being involved in the party. It's been really enjoyable in lots of ways for the last 5 years. Like I say, I've just reached a point where for me personally it become untenable. I'm going to miss because I've realised actually now that I've done this that actually the time and the place where I most meet other Lib Dems is conferences, and I'm not going to be going to them anymore. So people like yourself, and we've met a number of times, and I had good chats and stuff, and gone out for drinks and so forth, and that's going to happen a lot less now, unless I really go out of my way to go and meet up with Lib Dems in places. But I agree with most of what you've said there, probably all of it, to be honest, apart from the bit about you staying in the party. That's really the difference. I mean, when you talk about how difficult it is to influence things from the outside, yeah, I, of course, I've campaigned on electoral reform long enough to understand one of the massive inequities of first past the post is that it really, really stunts and blunts the effects of smaller parties. So, I completely understand that. And also, I just want to correct something that I have noticed a few people who've responded to what I've said, both on Twitter and in some blog posts, and people have been kind enough to write blog posts in response to what I've said. But some of them have seemed to have picked up from me that I think that political parties themselves per se are the problem. And actually, that's not what I said. And it's not what I think. I said I don't think any of the main parties, and specifically I mean Lib Dems, Tories and Labour, can affect the sort of change that I ultimately want to see. So that doesn't mean that perhaps other parties can't. I appreciate, like you say, very difficult for them to gain much traction. But, you know, I've spent some time today reading through Young People Party manifesto, agreed with some of it, didn't agree with others, read through the Pirate Party's manifesto, and actually, I agree with a hell of a lot of what's in that. Some of it seems a bit like I'd struggle to agree with, but I'd say probably 80 or 90% of it, I would say spot on. And some things in there I've thought, oh, actually, I haven't thought about that very much. Yeah. So, I'm not now, as I am right now, I'm not in the mood to be joining any other party right now. But, you know, in months to come or years to come, that may well change. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see on that. But yeah, I understand it's very difficult to affect change from the outside. But I just couldn't stay in as part of what I now perceive really as the system with the problems that it has. And what you said as well, Karen, about, you know, how you kind of you have to build up your movement and, you know, in order to get MPs and so on and so forth. And I think, sadly, that's part of what's kind of happened with the Lib Dems, that in order for them to get to the point where they've got 57 MPs and they're, you know, they're a significant force in Parliament and now they're in government, they've had to make the sort of compromises and they've had to accept the way politics works. You know, if you look at the kind of PR machine that's around Clegg and even stuff like we may come on to later, I don't know about some of the stuff, you know, kind of briefings about Tim Farron and so on and so forth. That's just the same old politics. And it's really sad to see, because I'd really prefer it if it wasn't like that. And maybe I'm just being hopelessly naive and that's just human nature. And no matter what the situation, that's going to happen. But I really hope that the Lib Dems were above stuff like that. And I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand and I don't like it.
I guess I've been on this coalition roundabout before, having lived through the 8 years of the coalition that we had with Labour up here. Now, we governed in very different times. There was like pretty much stacks of cash around. We were able to do an awful lot. We were able to introduce free personal care for the elderly. We absolutely put our foot down and stopped Labour from introducing tuition fees up here. We actually also insisted, after we came through the first re-election okay and Labour lost loads of seats, we were in a position where we could insist on STV for local government. I think the leadership of the Labour Party at that point were maybe not entirely too disgruntled about breaking up some of the Labour fiefdoms in the Central Belt, shall we say. But yeah, we were able to insist on introducing STV for local government, which has revolutionised Scottish councils, really. So we were able to have these kind of three huge gains over the 8 years that put a Lib Dem stamp on it. But there were really tough times as well, because you know, at one point there were people throwing 30 pieces of silver into our party headquarters because they said that we'd gone back on our tuition fees pledge. Does that sound familiar? There was issues over GM crops where we had the environment minister. There was issues over motorway extension, which really kind of upset the more kind of environmentalist party. There was the same sort of disconnect between the leadership and the grassroots. And I do think, actually, that when I look at the party, the Liberal Democrat Party, I see the party that I joined. The majority of the party are against the bedroom tax. The majority of the party are against secret court. And in fact, if you look at deep within the documents at the conference, we actually passed, was a kind of commitment that we would look again at this secret courts thing. If we were in government again. So I think they've realised that they made a big mistake there. Unfortunately, they didn't realise it in time. But, you know, I think that it's... Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it is worth sticking within the party, for me, because however much I disagree with some of the stuff that we've done in government, I think the benefits outweigh the problems.
Mark, I take it you can't agree with that equation.
I'm in an awkward position on this, because I do completely understand how difficult it is in coalition. Now, I spent the first three paragraphs of my blog post going out of my way to say that I'm not specifically blaming the Lib Dems for the fact that they've had to compromise on this stuff. Coalition is tough. You're always going to have to make decisions that you're not happy with and you know, go along with things that you're not happy with. And you're always going to be accused of betrayal, often by people who actually, the real agenda is to go back to, you know, the same old binary politics. They don't want the complication of coalition. They would rather we have, you know, we never saw coalition again, and that the Lib Dems are just on the sidelines being laughed at and or ignored. So I do accept that the Lib Dems have made some differences in government and some differences that I'm happy with. I think really, just I'm probably going to repeat myself, but my problem isn't specifically with the policies, it's with the entire structure. And I've had a problem with this right from the start, right from the start of when I first joined the party. And the fact that really Lib Dems being in government has proven to me that even the party of the mainstream that was the most like me and believed in the things most like me can't really make the changes that I want to see for one reason or another. Either because they've been politically outmaneuvered, or they just haven't got the firepower, or just the way things are, it just was not going to happen. And the longer they've been in government, the more complicit they are in that. You know, I'll come back to the PMQs thing. It might seem like a silly thing to some people. Most people aren't interested in PMQs. But for me, it's a kind of lodestone. It's a kind of barometer. The fact that we've just made no changes, there's no impetus for change. You know, all the stuff about the, you know, just they're part of the establishment, they are. And it's the establishment, really, in this context that I'm railing against, and the way things have always been done and will continue to be done, as far as I can see. You know, that's what I have a big, big problem with. Because, and not just because I'm kind of being, you know, deliberately obtuse or capricious. You know, this stuff is very, very important to me because it's about how we do our politics. And things like drugs policy will never change whilst we have the current system in place. You know, something that is incredibly important to me. You know, I think sometimes people think I want to change drugs policy because I want to be able to smoke a joint. I don't smoke marijuana. I don't take any drugs. And I haven't done since my mid-20s. And I have no intention of ever doing so again. This isn't for personal reasons. It's because I think our society would be much better. But our structures are such that they just ignore the evidence and they don't respond correctly. So it's not just a kind of structural thing, a kind of academic esoteric argument that I'm making here. It has a massive real world effect on what happens and what doesn't happen. And that's what's most important to me.
But let's look at it from another angle. I've been involved, as I say, in politics for 30 years now. And the representation of women in politics has improved a little bit, but not that much, not as much as it should have. And it's still pretty disgraceful. And in the Liberal Democrats, it's worse than, I'm not even going to try for a minute to defend our record on gender balance. It's absolutely appalling. Now, do I kind of think, well, politics doesn't reflect women? Do I just walk away from it? And then there's even less. You need good, liberal minded people in there fighting the arguments within the party. I think, I mean, I'm not going to I'm not attacking you for leaving, not at all. Everyone's got to make their own decision.
Okay, but Karen, can I just pick you up on something you said there? Because you just said leave politics, right? I haven't left politics.
Yeah, you have the party.
I've left the Lib Dems. Yeah. I still fully intend to be involved in politics as much as I can from outside of the main parties, and initially that will be on my own, but it may ultimately be through another party, a smaller party, or a pressure group, or, you know, whatever other mechanism I feel I can use to try and influence things. So I think there is sometimes this idea that if you're not in one of the main parties, you're not really involved in politics. And that's not right. And it shouldn't be like that.
But having been within the Liberal Democrats, from within the Liberal Democrats, I think that we can change things. And the fact that I think the running of PMQs is actually more to do with Parliament than it is to do with actually the government now. I mean, it's the function of that is for the Parliament to scrutinise the government. And it's a disgrace. But as I say, there's a lot of good work being done across the House where people are working together. I'm looking at things like Lynn Featherston, all the stuff that she's doing on body confidence, on internationally violence against women. I'm looking at people like Mike Crockett, a Liberal Democrat MP, who's working across the House to try and do something on nuisance calls. There's lots of good work going on. The stuff that hits the papers is just a tiny fraction of what politicians do. A lot of them actually do have their eyes raised and are trying to work to make life better. And what I think does need to happen with politics is that we do need to have more voices in there. It does need to be more inclusive. You do need to have more organisations. It does need to be freer. The only way we're ever really, I think, going to achieve that is if we all work together and get electoral reform. But the conservative forces in both the traditional parties who have all the power are never going to allow that.
Yeah, I'm calling it at half an hour. I knew we'd get there eventually. The ills of all the world are down to electoral reform.
You see,
I knew that if I had a Lib Dem and an ex-Lib Dem who's left over the system, we would get there eventually.
Yeah, just one.
It took quite a long time, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, just one thing though that I want to say on this. I mean, one thing that really, really drove me nuts when I was a member of the Lib Dems is how when I would try and persuade people about electoral reform, at least half the time, the response would be, well, you're a Lib Dem, you would say that. And that drove me absolutely nuts because I have been in favour of electoral reform for, like, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years. I joined the Lib Dems because they were the party that I thought were most likely to be able to make that happen. I wasn't in favour of electoral reform because I was a Lib Dem. It was the other way round. And yet that just never seemed to cut through with people. And I think that, again, that's a problem. And that's not necessarily a problem with politics. I think it's a problem with human nature. I think Richard Dawkins did an interesting piece about this recently. But people always assume that when you're arguing for something, it's because it's for your own personal benefit.
Well, I think also there is a sense that the Lib Dems don't help themselves on this issue by making electoral reform the anathema for the solution to absolutely everything.
But that's because it would be, Emma, you see, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay, whatevs.
it would get more women in politics, it would make it more diverse, it would be...
But there are...
What's going to solve every problem known to man?
For example, the things that Labour have done, which we're doing, which has made our party far more diverse, have been done under the first-past-the-post system.
So yeah, but your party is the most misogynistic organisation I've ever come across. You have to have something like that in because you wouldn't get any women selected either.
Karen. Please don't say things like that because we'll go off on a really silly tangent when you and I knock 12 bells out of each other. And B, it's just silly and untrue, isn't it? We have far more female MPs. For a Liberal Democrat to say that openly and honestly and with good faith and good heart, it's just silly. And it makes you look silly. So let's take a step back from saying that Labour are more misogynist than the party of... Well, quite apart from anything, the party who are currently have to investigate their former chief exec for misogynistic behaviours.
Well, if you read back on Lib Dem Voice, actually, a few weeks ago, we had a piece from a Lib Dem councillor who was, until this May, a Labour councillor. And she was going through all these arguments about all women shortlists. And she's made that point that you wouldn't get women selected in the Labour Party if you didn't have them.
We've had plenty of women selected on open lists, actually. That's not, it's just a myth. But, you know, we have women MPs. You have 7 women MPs out of 57, and those 7 are in precarious seats. And, yeah, I just will not take being preached or having that said about the Labour Party by a Lib Dem. It's stupid. It makes you look daft.
The thing is, Emma, at the end of the day, what you and I both want is more women in politics, and we need to find out
how we're doing it. Attack the things that my party are doing in order to make that happen, which work for us. And why say we're the most misogynistic party when we're also the party with the most female MPs? Does that sound like a kind of a position that's going to bring us into working together on this issue?
I have just come across so much misogyny within the Labour Party
Labour Party. Well, that's exactly the same thing about the Liberal Democrats. And we could go around and dance all the way on that. At the moment, there's only one party whose former chief exec is under investigation. But I'm not going to claim that this doesn't exist in the Labour Party because I'm not an idiot. Politics is a dirty, nasty game which has a lot of misogyny in it across the board. There is not one party that is completely innocent of these things. So I'm not going to say that one party is better than another, but I certainly will not say that Labour is the worst. Because by sheer dint of the statistics, we're just clearly not. It's just a nonsense. Evidence-based politics. There you go, Mark. Here's some evidence-based politics.
Anyway, let's move on.
I think we've probably grilled Mark as much as we might. Maybe we'll come back to it through some of the topics that we're going to cover further on. We thought we might also cover Mark, when you do join another party, if you do join another party, do you think you'll be wiping your entire web history clear of anything you might have once said about them?
So this is a reference to the fact that the Tories have apparently erased their entire web history, anything before 2010, before they came into government. So that
apparently it's not just their own web history that they've erased. They've also put something in the coding that stops the Internet Archive being able to show anything from that period either.
Well, I know a little bit about this because I have a technical background. What they've done is they've put a file in the root web folder called robots.txt, which sends instructions to web crawling robots from search engines and archive sites to say they don't want this stuff archived anymore. I mean, if you're going to remove it from your own website, it's fair enough to make sure that anyone else who's been archiving it removes it as well. And actually, very good point here is that, you know, the Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive, doesn't actually have rights to archive any of this stuff. It's just done with the goodwill of the people who leave the robots.txt either blank or with permission to do it. So I think that aspect of it is fair enough. Whether or not it's right for them to delete their entire history is another question. I mean, how much space was it taking up, I wonder? It can't, you know... Oh, well, maybe it was taking up some server space, but really, surely they've taken a bigger hit in terms of, you know, how this looks, the kind of, you know, almost Orwellian erasing of history, and we've always been at war with Eurasia attitude that this seems to demonstrate.
It also seems to very much... talk to the current narrative that the Tories have reverted to type. They're going, you know, they're going back to the Linton Crosby, they're going back to the Nasty Party.
Yeah, they want to get rid of Hood.
And they want to get rid of any of them. They're trying not to be that.
Yeah, Hugger Husky, Hugger Hoodie, Let Sunshine Win the Day. They're trying to kind of, you know, scorched earth, year zero type approach. And I mean, I don't really understand why they've done it because, okay, so some of the official archives online might not have this stuff, but there'll be plenty of things like, you know, the newspaper reports of the time and, you know, blog posts, and there'll be a massive footprint of everything that they did and said when they were in opposition anyway, that anyone with half a brain cell is going to be able to find in 30 seconds. Yeah. So it seems pretty self-defeating. I don't really understand why they've done it, and I hope that other parties take note. Actually, I was reading an article about this, and apparently Labour did something similar. I don't think they erased everything, but I think they erased quite a lot of stuff. So I don't think it's just the Tories, actually.
I think when they refreshed the website, they took down all the old content. But what I think is different from what I'm understanding is the Tories haven't really refreshed the website in the same way. Mm. But it is. I mean, it's... I think also there's probably a case to be made that Labour are saying, you know, we lost, we have to change, therefore those things that we said then are what we're moving away from. Whereas the case could be made that what K. David Cameron was selling to the country before the election is what he should be implementing in government.
I just think the saddest thing now is that not only have they done that on their own website, but they've actually removed all the Web Cameron stuff from YouTube as well. I think that's an absolute,
oh, really?
absolute tragedy.
Oh, what a shame!
I know, it was very entertaining, wasn't it? But I tend to agree with you. I mean, there is an argument that you really need to have the stuff that kind of formulated your arguments in the run up to an election. If you are in government, you need to keep that there so you can be held to it. And that's actually something actually quite almost kind of anti-democratic in a way. To take it down before you can be judged on it. Having said that, I'm sure that we have taken stuff off our website as well. I'm not sure in a great big swathe like the Tories have. But there's stuff that you will find on Lib Dem Voice that is no longer available on the web, on the party website.
You have to go through all those bloody broken links.
What broken links? Oh yes. Technology
joy. I think it smells bad, I think, is the thing with this. It doesn't pass the sniff test, whether or not it was done in a spirit of joy and innocence, or whether or not there should have been someone within the system at Conservative Central Office who had enough political nous to go, do you know what, this might look a bit odd. This probably won't be sending out the message we think it's sending out. Yeah. And yet, once again, it speaks to me of the Tories not being that good at politics.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a bubble mentality as well, I think.
Yeah.
It's looking at it from the bubble and not thinking about the people who are outside it. And I think, I mean, that is something that is actually quite common to all politicians. And I always think that, well, you know, when you walk into Parliament, it is like going back a couple of centuries. There's an escalator that takes you down from the lobby at Portcullis House right down into the start of the Palace of Westminster, and you just go back in time.
Yes.
And if people are doing that week in, week out on a, you know, it's bound to create, it's bound to be... to change the way you think, even if you try and make sure it doesn't.
Yeah, I went in that escalator for the first time when I went to visit my MP a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't even realise that Parliament and Portcullis House were connected in that way. I'd only ever been to both buildings separately. I didn't realise. And yeah, you're right, actually. It's like you've got all the kind of Gothic architecture and pomp and circuit, and then you go up an escalator and you're in a building that looks like it was built in about, you know, 1983. It's quite jarring.
I think it was much more recent than that, wasn't it, Portcullis House? It was built by the last Labour government.
Yes, it's built in the last 10 years, Mark.
Yeah. There you go, then. There you go.
There was some scandal about the trees. I can't remember exactly what it was.
There was 35 grand a year to for the upkeep or something. Yeah.
What, the internal trees?
The trees. And not to leave out other parties, there has also been other technological issues that have happened for the Labour Party this week, where... some emails between an advisor to Ed Balls and an advisor to Ed Miliband have been leaked. And it turns out that the advisor to Ed Miliband is not very keen on what Ed Balls' advisor was saying. It's slightly inside baseball, this, because it's not two politicians, it's two advisors having a bit of a go at each other. But again, what happened was, I believe, that somebody meant to send an email to James Morris, the Labour pollster, and in fact sent an email to James Morris, the Conservative MP. Once again, technology really showing our politicians at their very, very best.
Yeah, that's
there, but for the grace of God, I think it could have happened to any of us. That is the thing with technology.
I think that's straight out of Yes, Prime Minister, when they gave the knighthood to the wrong person with the same name. I think they ended up giving it to some union guy rather than some backbench MP. yeah.
But yeah, as you say, Karen, we've all sent an email to the wrong person. Yeah. It's just unfortunate to send it to an MP for the opposition party who then promptly gives it to the Daily Mail, the Sunday Mail.
Oh, well, there was actually, oh dear. There have been tales, actually, because of the way the parliamentary printing system is set up, of people in MPs' offices pressing print and pressing the wrong button, and their printing actually comes out in some MP's office hundreds of miles away. that's going to go wildly wrong one day. But I think it does show, I mean, I guess there are tensions in all parties, but we had with the Labour Party, I just think it's just been one kind of morass of disunity ever since I've known it existed. I mean, when I first became involved in politics, there was all the kind of the militant and then trying to kind of drag it back to being Kinnock trying to drag it back to being electable, and then the New Labour project, and then all the factionalism, the Brown and the Blair stuff, which is just, oh, it was so toxic and so depressing to watch. And you kind of read the Damien McBride book and just go, it's just so, it must be so debilitating to have to live through something like that. And now we're seeing it again with Ed Miliband and Ed Balls.
I honestly, genuinely don't think we're seeing it again. I think we're seeing some sniping between two senior people. I think there is some sniping, but it's nothing. I mean, nothing like what happened under Blair and Brown.
Well,
and there are many, many reasons why it wouldn't be, because for a start, Ed Miliband beat Ed Balls in an election, which, you know, helped one of the key factors that led to the long, long resentment between Gordon Brown and Tony Blair was that Gordon stood aside and believed he would have won the election in 94.
I don't think anyone seriously thought Brown would have won, except for Brown and maybe a few of his acolytes. I mean,
he did seriously think he would win, and that's what led to that, you know, 14 long years of resentment.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that always irked me about the whole Blair Brown thing is that there's been a kind of, funny enough, we were talking about editing of history, weren't we? There's been an editing of history around that, because while it was going on, senior ministers and senior Labour figures would constantly come out and say, there's nothing in this. It's all just got up by the media. They get on fine. You know, look at how, you know, Tony's giving Gordon an ice cream during the 2005 election campaign. And, you know,
that, giving Tony that, an ice cream.
Sorry, the other way around. And the Anthony Minghella, you know, soft focus, you know, we may have had our differences, but blah, 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 all of that stuff. And it was like, that's what used to wind me up, because I knew that these spokespeople were lying. I knew the ministers were lying. They were saying things that they knew to be untrue. Now, they were in a difficult position, because the two most senior people in the party were at each other's throats and often not even talking to each other, as we now know from the memoirs. So when you hear something like this about this email, but then immediately, and obviously in this podcast, Emma, you're playing this role, you've just said, it's nothing, it's fine, it's not. You know, we've been here.
I didn't say it's nothing. I don't think the two aren't best mates, but I don't think they're like anything like Brown and Blair. I think it's very interesting. I've been thinking about this since, we've been having conversations for a while about your sort of withdrawal of interest in being a member of the Liberal Democrats. Mm. And I've been thinking about my sense of you as a tribalist. Mm. And I still have that sense of you as a tribalist. And I've been thinking why I still have that. I think the thing with you that I get is that you're not a tribalist who attaches himself to a tribe. You're a tribalist who rejected a tribe. You know, I think your first big political rejection was the Labour Party, and you've never really got over that.
That's an interesting point, actually, because my parents were and are pretty staunch socialists, and they were card carrying members. They never went out and delivered leaflets or anything, but you know, they were members. I voted for Blair. I would have voted Labour in 92, but I've missed it by about 3 months because I was too young. And then I voted Labour wholeheartedly in 97, and I voted for them again in 2001. I did reject Labour, and it was partly because of the, because of certain policies, things like Iraq and, you know, just kind of disappointing with things like civil liberties. But it was also partly, to come right back to what I was saying at the start, just the whole structure of politics. And I was incredibly disappointed with how the dysfunctionality at the top of the Labour Party through this Blair and Brown feud that went on for over a decade was massively destructive to politics and to the government of this country. Imagine how much more Labour could have achieved if they hadn't have been at each other's throats. And, you know, and I'm not saying that as a tribalist Lib Dem or a tribalist anti-Labour person. I was just incredibly disappointed.
You have that sense of constantly battling Labour. And I really get that from every time we talk about any of these things. You will assume the worst. So you'll assume that Balls and Miliband are Brown and Blair.
No, actually,
They're completely different. Actually, in different circumstances.
Actually, no, I don't. I mean, I know that Miliband...
Well, you did when we talked about this earlier.
Ed Miliband. No, I didn't. I said we'd get into it on the podcast. I didn't actually go into any detail. Ed Miliband and Ed Balls were very close for a lot of years. Now, like Brown and Blair at the start, to be fair, they were very close. And then there was obviously the schism in 94. But I don't actually think that this is as bad as that. What I do think, though, is that Labour have to be very careful, because, like, for precisely the reason I just said, that at the time, they just denied everything and they pretended it was all fine. If that sort of thing was to happen again, I think instead of it just being seen as a kind of a particular set of personalities at the top of Labour under one set of circumstances, it will start to be seen as an endemic problem. So I do think that Labour has to nip this in the bud, because, you know, we all tolerated the TBGBs, you know, even though it was pretended it wasn't happening at the time. We now know it was. I don't think Labour's credibility will survive another protracted period of that sort of thing. So they need to hope that this means, that it doesn't happen
again. Does dealing with it mean Ed Miliband saying, right, I don't like Ed Balls, therefore he can't be in my cabinet? Or does it mean him saying, I don't particularly get on with him as a person, but he's a senior figure in the Labour Party and we have to work together?
Well, he didn't put him in the Shadow Chancellor role at first. He did it after Alan Johnson resigned.
No, but so what does it
was clearly
mean?
Bad,
is
bad
it
blood
more
initially.
Is it to have put him in the Shadow Chancellor role or not to? Is it better consensual politics to do that or not to do that?
Yeah, it's better consensual politics. My point is that Labour need to be very careful now, more so than I would say any other parties. And I think we were going to come on to the fact that there's been some stuff in the Lib Dems as well this week to do with briefing against Tim Farron, which I think is equally disgusting. But I just think because of the massive damage and problems that it caused both for Labour and for the country with Blair and Brown, Labour have to be particularly acute to this now. In the same way as you often say, Emma, that, you know, the Tories aren't trusted on the NHS and Labour are, and maybe Labour aren't trusted on the economy as much as the Tories. I think this sort of thing, this kind of infighting at the top of the party, is now a particular problem for Labour, and they have to be very careful about it.
I think that's a really, really dangerous position for anyone from another party, which I know you're not now, to take, because it just sounds complacent. And as you say, we are going to come on to some other issues. Karen, sorry, I'll bring you
I was going to say, what's quite interesting, actually, is now you've got a government with two parties in it. It's actually more functional than the whole 13 years of Labour government. And actually, the Tories before that, where they were all riven with bitching and sniping. Actually, we know that there's two completely different sets of values between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats. And you can have these policy disagreements expressed in a reasonable manner. I mean, Nick Clegg was on Andrew Marr this morning, and he was just saying very, very reasonable without any rancour, anything like that. You know, this is where our tax priorities were, giving a tax break to the lowest paid. What the Conservatives wanted to do was to cut inheritance tax for the rich and, you know, cut the top tax rate for the rich and to give this silly marriage tax break. And he said all of that. He didn't say silly. I think it's silly. But he did that quite openly, happily, setting out a different policy position. And I think that's the government has been quite, you know, much more functional because of the two parties working in coalition. There's been very little there's been much less, I think, bitching to the press and briefings in the press that compared to what it was like between 1997 and 2010.
I think that there's a lot going to come out. Certainly when you talk to senior civil servants, they would not describe several of our government departments as particularly functional at the moment. There are real issues in at least three that I can think of that are not functioning at all in any sense. And several more that feel just completely sidelined. So we shall see. I think that in the same way that maybe a lot came out after Labour left power, that the same may happen after 2015, 2020. Depends on what happens next time at the next election. But again, coming back to my point about complacency, I think it's really, really silly for any party to claim that they don't have internal bitching. We've seen it in the Tories, the Bastards and Major actually coming out and basically giving Cameron a good kicking in the last week or so. And there was a story, but I don't know the details, Karen, if you could fill us in. Apparently there's been some briefing against Tim Farron from
the
sources.
The Independent ran a story yesterday basically saying, quoting a high-up person within the Liberal Democrats saying, what's not to love about sanctimonious, God-bothering, treacherous little shit as Tim Farron, which I find just utterly appalling that any member of our party, particularly one that's identified as, you know, a high up source in the party, would say that about another member of the party, particularly such an effective president as Tim Farron is. He has done so much as president. His role really is to be like the ambassador from the grassroots to the leadership, and he does that incredibly well. He seems to, you know, he responds, he engages very well with party members. He's a very popular figure. And, you know, Nick Clegg has done an awful lot to try and improve his relationship with the grassroots in recent months. And for somebody who is associated with his kind of leadership to say something like that really isn't clever, because, you know, I mean, Tim, I mean, there was another, Tim's very popular. There was another incident in the summer where they tried the same thing about Vince Cable, a similar sort of thing. And that was shown to be just complete nonsense. But to attack people who are popular in the party, in the press, is just utterly counterproductive, and they just need to stop it.
Yeah, and I think what's also interesting is, I mean, we don't know who actually said this, but I think you have to assume it's come from someone close to Clegg or within his camp.
I'm not sure it's that close, actually.
Well, okay.
It's certainly close-ish.
Close-ish. And, you know, I mean, the amount of times that Clegg has talked about grown-up politics, and he's used that almost as a weapon against the membership, who he is implying aren't being grown-up about things. And I suspect he thinks I'm not being very grown-up, having left, if it's ever popped up onto his radar, which it probably hasn't. But people like me that, you know, leave the party for whatever reason, he probably thinks I'm not being grown-up. But this kind of stuff is just playground stuff. It's pathetic.
Yeah. You're not going to get an argument from me in that.
No, I agree. I mean, it's the kind of politics I really, really don't like, whether it's happening in the Labour Party, whether it's happening in the Tories, whether it's happening in the Lib Dems. It's there's no need for it. It's big bollocks, macho shithead politics, and I can't be doing with it, whoever's trying it on. I mean, Tim Farron is an interesting character. He plays the naive a little bit too much. I did actually say this to him on Twitter the other day as a genuine piece of advice, because it was about the 20th time I'd seen him use the phrase, it's news to me, about people speculating about his leadership. And I thought, well, it can't be news to you, because I saw you'd say that yesterday and the day before,
He reminds me...
You know that people are speculating about this stuff.
I really like Tim Farron. I think I've met him a few times. He's a really, really nice guy. He seems absolutely genuine, but his persona does come across a little bit like a cross between Louis Theroux and Columbo. I think, you know, this kind of faux naive persona, you know, he can't be as naive as he sometimes comes across. Yeah. He just can't.
I think it's actually starting to jar a little. And, you know, he doesn't need to do that because he's popular enough without it jarring. So he just needs to find a different formulation, a different way of putting himself across, just because if he is positioning himself for leader, and let's face it, he probably is, then he's got to get over the final hurdle, and being this popular now is fine, but he doesn't want to peak now.
I'm sure we'll see a flash of steel, a number of flashes of steel, if and when that time comes, and I'm sure he's more than capable of it. I mean, he's been a kind of, you know, street fighting Lib Dem out there, you know, getting votes. He managed to take what I think was a pretty no hope constituency and turn it around. You know, he reminds me of Ashdown in that respect, and I'm sure he's got the inner steel of Ashdown as well.
I'm sure he works so hard. What he needs to do is ease into that steely persona now, because the slightly naive vicar running a community centre persona is sweet, but it's not where he needs to be positioning himself.
But you know, that man gets absolutely everywhere. I mean, the chap who came to pick me up, I had a car accident last week, and the guy came to pick me up to go and get the hire car from the insurance company, he came from the Lake District, and he was singing Tim Farron's praises, and I'm thinking, is there no escape?
My friend who lives in the next door constituency, who left the Lib Dems quite a long time before you did, Mark, but had been one because of Tim Farron, because she really liked him. He's good at what he does. He just, if he does want to be leader, my advice to him, and I think he'd be a good leader, my advice to him is that he needs to take the persona to the next step.
Well, his politics would be far closer to yours than Clegg's are. So
Which is probably one of the reasons I'd prefer him over Clegg. Oh. I mean, but I think, to be quite honest, the Lib Dems, we probably haven't got time to get into this now, but I've written before that I think the Lib Dems will have to ditch Clegg sooner or later, and it's when they do it. They shouldn't do it too soon.
I have to say, I am a big fan of Clegg's, despite various policy issues in which I disagree with him. This is a guy who is the same guy that I first met 15 years ago when he came to be shortlisted as a Euro candidate in the East Midlands. He was so passionate about helping kids in school, social mobility, all that kind of stuff then, and he's now getting the chance to do that, and he's doing what he said he always would. And the other thing that I think is great that he's doing is things like stuff on mental health, and I think people who people who are willing to consider voting for the Liberal Democrats, he's actually very, very popular amongst them, even in Scotland.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree, and I don't think we've got time at the end of the podcast, but we'll have you back on another time to discuss Clegg.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to thank Mark and Karen for joining us today, and also to thank Audio Boo for kindly hosting the podcast, and Kevin McLeod at incomputech.com for our funky theme music.